Today, I want to talk a little bit about grace, and it's actually a little bit about why I became disciples of Christ and not growing up that way, and actually part of why I'm even here now. And I want to talk about this in terms of the Gospel of Mark, our text for today. It's the lectionary text for this week, the Gospel text. And I didn't realize this for several years, but the Gospel of Mark is really my favorite Gospel. You'd think that I'd prefer the Gospel of Matthew, since it kind of has the best name, after all. But for me, it's Mark. And it's not that Mark is all that well written. Luke is much more artistic and complex. In fact, Mark's Greek is actually pretty rough, as some of you know. It's a bit like hearing a five-year-old tell a story. And we did this, and we did this, and we went here. And it kind of goes all along like that. And it's not even the greatest gospel if you like Advent and Christmas or Easter celebrations, because there's really no Christmas story. Jesus just kind of shows up on the scene. And Mark does have the crucifixion and death and empty tomb. The resurrection's implied, but that's about it. The original ending, you have people running away in fear and terror. It's not the best Easter pageant, after all. But this ending really points to the primary reason that I like Mark. Because in Mark's telling of the story, the disciples, they're not there at the end. In fact, all the way through, they're kind of not really there. They're clueless. They just don't get it. And for me, looking at these disciples who become the foundation of the church, who bear witness to the good news, these disciples who preach and teach and lead, who are the reason that we're here now as a community, these clueless disciples somehow get redeemed. We don't hear about this in Mark. That's left to our faith and our knowledge. And see, this is one of the things that sort of puzzles me about the disciples in Mark and how they could be so dense. I mean, really, this is a group that, for the most part, all 12 of them, they spend at least a year with Jesus. They hear all his preaching. They see all his miracles. They watch all of his interactions. Some of them even get to see the transfiguration. They could be said to have what one would call a personal relationship with Jesus. And yet they still don't quite get it. Time after time after time, Jesus has to come back and tell them again and again and again. And I really think for me, this really helps me with seeing the disciples as this example. I'm not saying we should be clueless and not pay attention, especially if you're a student in class. Not paying attention to try to be like the disciples isn't a good thing. And especially 9:32 would not be a key example verse for you. They did not understand what he was saying and were afraid to ask him. I wouldn't claim that if you were a student. But what I'm saying is that if this group that was actually face-to-face with Jesus and didn't quite get it, could become the leaders of the church, then maybe, just maybe, there's hope for transformation and redemption for the rest of us. And not just a salvation in the future, but redemption in the here and now, because really, for that group, that's what happened to them after the resurrection. God's grace was sufficient that this stumbling group of slow-to-learn people could be redeemed, could experience God's grace and go on to lead the church. And I don't know about you, but at least some of the time, I feel a little bit like Mark portrays his disciples. I seem to not really have a clue what God is trying to do, either through me or through other people or the settings that I'm in. Some of the times it seems as if I haven't been even really paying attention to the right things. In fact, at these times when I thought I was paying attention, I've somehow missed some or even all of what was really important. I'm sort of lost and in the dark. And usually I find out eventually. I'm not that slow. And Wednesday's anti-racism workshop was one of those experiences for me. I thought I knew what was going on, what was important, what we were trying to accomplish on campus. And what I realized Wednesday is I really didn't see clearly or fully what God was trying to do through LPTS. In fact, some of the time, I confess, I might have even been arguing about the wrong things. Just like the disciples in Mark's gospel. In our text for today, Jesus predicts, it starts with Jesus predicting his betrayal, death, and resurrection again. This is his second time instructing the disciples on this exact topic. And again, the disciples don't understand. This time, there's not that sort of strong reaction that Peter gives, pulling Jesus aside and saying, we're not going to have that problem here. We don't have that problem. None of them try to deny Jesus' reality this time. So, as a result, there's not a strong rebuking on Jesus' part. None of that get thee behind me, Satan, language, which, as somebody who's tried to teach in the past, that would kind of squelch further discussion, I would think. But, and it makes sense as a response from Jesus, and that the disciples might not want to ask if they didn't understand or say anything. But I also suspect that given what Mark tells us next, that part of the reason for the misunderstanding here is the disciples weren't paying attention. Instead, it appears that rather than listening to Jesus, talking about what he meant, talking about the casting out of the demon that they've just witnessed, they were arguing about who was the greatest. They were arguing about who had status, privilege, and power in their little group, competing with each other, sort of giving in to that competitive, hierarchical sense of the Roman Empire that they were a part of. Not seeing the possibilities that Jesus brought, or God's grace through Jesus. Now, I know some of you are also probably thinking and looking at this group, typical group of men, arguing about who's the tallest, biggest, strongest, whatever. And, yeah, I think that's probably the case a little bit. But what I want to suggest is that the disciples missed what Jesus was saying. They weren't paying attention to the right things. They'd heard what Jesus had said. They'd seen the transfiguration. They'd maybe guessed that, well, this is what's going to happen with him, then we're special. We've got it. The only question is which one of us is at the top? But if we look in this text, it's just ironic to me that not too long before this episode, when they're seeing that transfiguration, what does God say? The voice from heaven says, "This is my beloved Son. Listen to him. Listen." And they don't. Not hardly at all. Because after that, there's this argument amongst the disciples and some of the scribes and townspeople over the healing of a child. And the disciples can't do it. They fail. They fail to have any effect that they stir the crowd up, but that's about all they do. Jesus has to step in. And I can almost see him doing sort of a face palm, like, oh my gosh. Because what does Mark have Jesus say? How long do I have to put up with you? How long do I have to put up with this faithless generation? This clueless group of disciples? So Jesus steps in and casts out the demon and gives more instruction yet again to the disciples. And his instruction, really simple. You have to pray to work this kind of healing and miracle. Not that the disciples have ever seen Jesus pray before, not that they've ever seen him pray over a healing child. That's been part of the story all along. We're getting towards the end of the story here, and they've completely missed it. And not only that, after they've had this failure, after they couldn't do something, they're arguing about who's the greatest. And so we get to the text, and once again, Jesus instructs them. And he tells them something that's quite honestly, for that time and place, not just shocking, but even scandalous. He tells them that to be first, to be a leader, they have to be last. They have to give up the honor of being first. Pretty important in that day and age. But they even have to go further than that. They have to become a servant, or actually a slave to all. In other words, they have to give up not only the power, the social standing, and privilege they thought they had as Jesus' disciples, but all of their power, all of their social standing, all of the privileges they have as free adult males in a patriarchal, slaveholding society. They have to give up their lives and become obedient like a slave, which in that time and place meant being completely subject even to the point of death. They have to live out God's grace to everyone in a way that was unthinkable. They have to let go of who they are. To let go of valuing those things so that God's grace can come through them to reach those people. That's a little hard for me to take. That's a hard word to hear. To have to let go of all of that. To further emphasize this point, Jesus used the example of welcoming a child. Now to me, this always seems out of place here, because we're talking about giving up all this privilege and all this power and status to be one of the first, to be one of the leaders, and then you bring a child in. Now, I kind of used to always wonder, where did Jesus get the child? Because we haven't had any children right here, but he's in a house, so I can go with that. But it still seems a little out of place to me. And this is one of those places where you kind of have to dig a little and readjust our 21st century lenses to look back to the first century. We see children as innocents, deserving all the love and care in the world, little humans with all the rights and all the values that adults have, perhaps even more so. But from a first century perspective, children were often not seen with this sort of value, especially when they were other people's children. Which, maybe. Seriously, though, in fact, they were seen by some as non-persons. They have the same status or even less status than slaves. Infant abandonment and exposure did happen. Legally, they had zero status, none whatsoever. Now, some of the sources we have for this, of course, are written by the dominant males who have the power about being able to expose children and do this. But the fact that they were writing about it and documenting it means it did happen. Children didn't have any status or standing. and they couldn't do anything to gain status or power or privilege. So what Jesus has said is not only do you have to become like a slave and give up everything, to reinforce this, he said, welcome those with even less status, with even zero status and power in his name. They were called to show God's grace to those who could in no way pay it back, who could in no way merit it or deserve it or earn it. They had to completely reverse their thinking about who has status before God. It's not what they were arguing about on the road, but in fact the total opposite. That everyone, even the slaves and those with less status, had the same standing and should be welcomed in the same way in Jesus' name. That's who has the privilege and the status before God. They were being called on to show the same kind of grace that God was showing the world through Jesus. Now, grace is variously defined. You can look it up in Bible dictionaries, the Oxford English Dictionary, in several places. The best definition I found this last week, and going back through this again, the one that speaks to me, is that grace is unmerited divine favor bestowed on God's people. Unmerited. Not anything that can be earned by what is done, by who someone is in terms of status or privilege, who their parents were, or anything else. Completely unmerited. Divine favor given to God's people. Everyone is a child of God, period. It's divine blessing given regardless. No questions of status, of power, of good works or privileges or education or income. I would think that by this point in the gospel, the disciples would understand this. They've seen Jesus minister to people all across the spectrum. Preach the same gospel all across the spectrum. Bring the good news. Bestow that grace and healing on everyone. But then what the disciples do next is just, to me, beyond belief. And it echoes with what I see today, some of what I do, some of what I see in the news. Because when we have experienced God's grace, we kind of do what the disciples do next in Mark's gospel. If you look in Mark 9:38, they try to stop someone who's casting out demons in Jesus' name. They try to put a limit on God's ministry, on who God can heal, and who can work for God. They try to stop it. They try to limit where God's grace is active in this world. Who gets it? Who can take advantage of that divine favor? And Jesus once again has to instruct. And what he says in Mark 9:40 to me is a bit shocking. It's not what I normally hear. What he says is, whoever is not against us is for us. What? Wait, what? That's not what I wanted to hear. That's not what I usually hear. What I usually hear is whoever is not for us is against us, and they're going straight to hell. That's what I hear. Because that's what's easy. If you're not on my side, then you must not be on God's side either. And that is not what Jesus says. That's not how God's grace works. We don't get to make that call. I don't get to make that judgment. God's grace and God's action in this world is bigger than I can judge or know. or even at times admit to. And I confess, this is one of the places I have the hardest time. I often want to say, you can't be doing God's work if you do or don't do certain things. You believe a certain way or go to that church. You can't be a real Christian if. You can't be saved if. It's pretty easy to stand in God's grace and keep others out. And I constantly have to remind myself, I don't get to make that call. That is not my decision. God doesn't give me that power or privilege or status to make that call. I'm supposed to be like the one without any of that and welcome all those others who have none of that. And so what I need to constantly remind myself is that if I'm serious about my faith, and this is what I want to call on all of us to do here at LPTS as well, if we're serious about who we claim to be and what we're committed to being about here at LPTS as a transforming institution, then we need to make it true that for everyone, God's unmerited grace is truly spoken here, at this place.